Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Quantum Spirituality on DreamVision 7 RadioNetwork.com, the show where past spiritual wisdom and present-day science merge to show us our future. Your host is Peter Canova, author of the 25-time award-winning book series, The First Souls Trilogy, available on Amazon, and Peter's website, petercanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. This show is a live video, so if you're only listening and want to watch, go to Peter's website, petercanova.com, PeterCanova.com, where you can access his Facebook page to leave comments or questions, and click the D7RN link where you can receive a free gift video.
Welcome, everybody, back to another show of Quantum Spirituality, the program where the past and the present merge to tell us about our future. And today we have a very interesting guest all the way from the Isle of Grand Breton, the UK, Scott Ascoff. But before we start with Scott, I just want to say that we have many first-time listeners. I mean, the show is growing really rapidly. We're getting about 8,000 new listeners a month. We're already somewhere in the vicinity of 300,000 and 500,000 listeners. So for those of you who are listening to this, I want to remind you that this is also a video program that you can access by going to my website, petercanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. And you'll see a banner there for Dream Vision 7 Radio, where you can access my page on Dream Vision 7. And from there, there's a link to listen to this or see the show on video, as well as listen to it. So today, we're going to be talking about the topic of UFOs. Now, there's been a renewed interest in UFOs, or sometimes as they're called now, UAFs, unidentified aerial phenomena, UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. And in no small measure, that's because we had a gentleman here in the United States, Chris Mellon, who was the Deputy Defense Secretary of Intelligence, who recently came out and flagged the fact that we undeniably have things flying into our airspace. And he is urging the government to really be more forthcoming about what this is all about. And my co-producer, Scott Carlin, who is working with me on getting my novel, Pope Annalisa, into a TV series, is working on a major documentary with Chris Mellon and Jacques Vallée, who is sort of the godfather of the whole UFO phenomena, is also going to be featured in this documentary. They're going to be discussing the fact that we most definitely have things in our airspace, and it's time to start acknowledging it and stop sweeping it under the rug. Which leads me to introducing our guest, Paul Ascoff from the United Kingdom. Now, Paul first became fascinated with the subject of UFOs and the paranormal when he was about 11 years old, and he had his first sighting. Paul's from Yorkshire, England. He served for 13 years in the British Army, reaching the rank of staff sergeant. And he was employed in the medical field as a paramedic and a clinical advisor. And Paul has studied the subject of UFOs for over 50 years. And he became an investigator for BUFORA, which is the acronym for the British UFO Research Association, investigating sightings and paranormal incidents, as well as documenting his own sightings. And he has written the book, UFOs, The Real Story, recounting his experiences. So, Paul, I want to welcome you to Quantum Spirituality.
Hello, Peter, and thank you for having me.
Great. And, Paul, you know, I kind of like to start things from the very, very beginning to put a frame of reference in for our viewers. So, you know, I'd like to know, why did you write this book on UFOs, and what is the main overarching thesis of the book?
I think for me, from my point of view, it was to give a larger picture of the whole UFO and paranormal field, where people tend to do just slices of the pie or pieces of the cake, like they'll do, like Rendlesham Forest in the UK, they'll do Roswell, or they'll do the Pascagoula incident. But very few people tend to look at the whole picture, like they'll look at cryptids and Bigfoot, maybe, but they don't look other spirit and ghosts and spirituality side of things, same as they don't look at UFOs. And I believe that they are all tied together. Okay. And I think that's what got me into it. People tend to do pieces of the pie. I mean, I know we do have Jacques Vallée and some of the others that have been in the field a long time that have put a lot of theories out there, and wonderful that these people are doing that. But the general normal investigator and author tend to stick to pieces of the puzzle.
Okay, so that's great. We're gonna try and tie some of those different pieces together. Sure. During the course of our interview here. So tell us about your first sighting then, and exactly you know, what set you on this track. I guess it was when you were younger, you actually had your own sighting, and this was one of the served as an impetus to get you first interested in UFOs.
Sure. I mean, I wasn't interested in UFOs. I'd never particularly even heard of them, nor the paranormal either. I was an avid reader. I used to read all the time. My parents were really strict and made sure we had a good sort of educational background, and they made us read. So I was into reading and liked reading. And then what happened, we moved to a new home on the edge of a small village out in the countryside. And literally from our home, you could walk for miles. We used to go out of the garden straight into the fields. And we had dogs, and one of our neighbours who was a war veteran, he only had one lung, so we used to take his dogs for a walk with ours. So myself and my younger brother, I was just 11 years old. I believe it was about the beginning of September 1968. And up to that point, I'd had no interest whatsoever. And the normal evening routine was my brother and I would take the dogs for a walk, put the dogs away, say goodnight to our parents, go to bed. And this evening we'd been out, put the dogs away. My father was in the front garden, so we went into the front garden, which looked due east. And as we went out, my father sat on the bench, my brother and I sat at either side of him. It was just getting dark. Now I'm talking September 1968, so there was not the light pollution. There wasn't the background light that you have now. Plus we had a very rural location. So looking due east from our home to the north, all the sky was completely covered in cloud, but it ended rather abruptly in this bank of cloud, and then the whole of the southern sky was clear. The first few stars and constellations had started to come out, and my father was pointing them out to us. Now, he wasn't an astronomer, but he was interested in this sort of thing. He had a telescope, and he liked to involve the children. So the three of us were sat there, looking at the night sky, looking at the first few stars that were coming out. And all of a sudden, out of this thick bank of cloud came two brilliant, pearly white UFOs. Came zooming out this bank of cloud and then just stopped dead. There was no deceleration. Boom, they were still. And if you can imagine like a V formation, but one of them was missing. So one was slightly from our viewpoint, one was slightly to one side and slightly behind the other. And they immediately stopped dead. And the one that was nearest to the cloud, you could actually see the light from it reflecting off the surface of the cloud. And they were just a brilliant pearly white. You couldn't see any rotation. There was no noise whatsoever. And the thing what happened, as they stood still, I got this really clear, what I can only describe, and I don't know why, but I got this feeling, it was a benevolent male voice, quite clearly in my head, that said, "Oops, we didn't mean to have been seen. We didn't mean to come out the cloud." Now, I heard that quite clearly. And it was in English, it was in my head. And they remained stationary just for a few seconds. And then without changing position relative to each other, they were immediately moving very quickly, fast, away from us, going due east. So they were heading south, stopped, and then they headed due east. There was no acceleration, there was no swerving about or anything. They moved really quick and really straight. And as they moved away from us down the surface of this bank of cloud, as they got closer and further away, you could still see the light shining from them. And one other thing that I noticed was the light from them at the back seemed to go into a tile, like there was an atmosphere around them that sloughed off and made this tiny little teardrop shape. So as they moved, there was this tiny teardrop. And you could see it as they moved away, still this brilliant pearly white. They didn't change shape. They were perfectly circular, no sound throughout. And we just watched them until they disappeared out of sight in the distance. And probably where we were, the terrain was quite flat. So we could probably see maybe 8 miles, something like that, until they'd gone away in the distance and they faded away. And you can imagine all three of us, no sound whatsoever. And all three of us, I'm trying to think, the size was probably about the size of a dime held at arm's length. So they were quite large, really, much larger than a star or anything like that. And all three of us were silent, mouths agape, sort of agog, looking at the sky. And we sat there in silence. And then my father was the first to speak. And he said, well, there's nothing that we've got that can do that. And immediately, it's the, I always say when people ask me, you know, it's something, for want of a better term, that's alien. It's something that's not from this earth. It was so bizarre, so odd. And it was like, why don't I know about this? Why aren't people talking about this? Why isn't it in the news? Why isn't it in the newspapers? And it was from that moment on, I wanted to know the nuts and bolts of how something could physically move like that and we not be aware of it.
Yeah. Now, I have never really personally sighted anything that looked like a UFO, but I remember an incident when I was younger. I had a younger brother and a friend, and they decided to pitch a tent in our backyard. And our backyard overlooked a big golf course. This was in Boston, Massachusetts, not Boston, yeah. England. And we lived in a suburb outside of Boston. And I remember about, 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard a bang. My parents were away. I was the only one in the house. So my brother and his friend were out in the backyard. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard a banging on the door and they ran inside. I opened the door and they ran inside hysterical, kind of almost like crying. And I said, what happened? And they said, you know, these lights came at us over the golf course. They were just floating over the golf course and they were doing all these weird things. And I said, well, I mean, was it a golf cart? And they said, no. They said it was hovering in the air and it was moving at all these like weird angles. And I don't know what it was to this day, but whatever it was, it scared the bejesus out of them. Okay, so this idea of how they move, okay, I want to segue this into a line of questioning that ultimately is going to get at the potential origin of the UFOs. These UFOs, obviously, they move in ways that seem to defy the physical laws of our universe. And you stated something very interesting and very close to my line of thinking here about that, where you said that, in essence, these crafts bring their own atmosphere with them. They create their own atmosphere. So in a sense, they're vibrating at a frequency that's not exactly in resonance with ours. And therefore they, would be able to move according, to maybe their own physical law, their own laws, but, not be subject to ours. I think that's a very interesting statement, and it opens up a whole line of thoughts with me. But could you elaborate on that a little bit more? Let's talk about that.
Sure. The way that I give analogy that's really good, and it goes on the spiritual side of things as well. If you imagine the electromagnetic frequency that we deal with on a normal day-to-day basis. And you have the radio waves at the top end, and then it comes down through the infrared, and then you get visible light and the acoustic spectrum that we physically know and deal with. And then it goes down through the ultraviolet, X-rays, and the gamma rays on the lower end. Now, the actual bit that we see and hear is less than 0.1% of what we know of, right? Now, modern cosmologists and people with far better brains than I, they are now saying that dark energy and dark matter make up the greater part of the universe. We just, with our physics that we know of at the moment, that's the general public know of, are unable to measure this, but they know it's there. Now, you've heard figures bandied about 75, even as much as 95% of the universe is made up of dark energy and dark matter. So that means we only see 0.1% of maybe as little as 5%. So imagine how small a portion that is that we are normally aware of. Now, if you imagine that our normal electromagnetic spectrum as an old vinyl LP, an old vinyl record. Now, that is our frequency that we deal with, our spiritual frequency, if you like, the vibration that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. Now, there's not just one record, there's a whole stack of records at different frequencies. And that is what I believe is in this dark energy and dark matter. And that I'll say ET for a broad spectrum term at the moment, but ET is completely understanding of the whole of this energy field, the whole of the stack of records, are able to understand it, are able to use it, are able to manipulate it. And therefore, they're not bound by the constraints that we have just on our record, on our frequency.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy, Paul, because it's very much in keeping with what we espouse in this show. You know, in quantum spirituality, we take ancient spiritual texts, particularly the Gnostic spiritual texts, and we validate those and show how they're directly connected. In fact, how they really presupposed almost every major theory of modern quantum physics. And in this scheme of things, we understand that it all begins with consciousness. And that consciousness, in essence, spreads itself out in different dimensional frequencies, different levels of frequencies or consciousness, very much like the grooves of the record you're talking about. Let's for our viewers, let's make it simplistic. Let's talk about it like concentric circles, layers of an onion or grooves in a record. Yes. Okay. And that each frequency kind of begets or produces the next frequency down from it. But the higher frequencies can sort of see what's going on in the lower frequencies. The lower frequencies can only perceive a little bit of what's happening in the higher frequencies. Sure. This whole idea of dimensional frequencies is really what constitutes the fabric of reality. Now, I've always felt that dark energy and dark matter, and incidentally for our viewers, dark energy and dark matter are dark because they don't interact with visible light. In other words, we have never been able to see dark energy or dark matter. We've been able to sort of feel their footprints. It seems to be what both holds the universe together into galaxies, which is dark matter, and also what is causing universal expansion, which is dark energy pushing the universe out. They're kind of like counterbalancing forces. I have always believed that those are interpenetrating energies from other dimensions, and which is probably why they don't interact with the visible light spectrum that we use here to detect things. Other frequencies certainly affect what we're doing here, even though we can't directly perceive them. I think this is what Paul is really saying, and it leads me to this conclusion, Paul, and I'd like your take on this. I've always thought of the UFO phenomena and these visitations less as extraterrestrial as opposed to interdimensional, that these visitations are coming from these other dimensions, not necessarily from other planets in our solar system or galaxy, but are coming from other, dimensional frequencies, hence their unusual properties of movement that seems to defy our physical laws. And as you mentioned, one great explanation for that might be, well, they carry their own atmosphere with them. They carry their own dimensional properties with them, and kind of like a bubble as they operate in our universe here. Yeah. But how do you what is your understanding, let's say, about the origin of the UAPs or UFOs in our visiting us here?
Yeah. That's a good question. And I think they've been here forever. And we are now only with the modern society that we have with the internet and everybody else and the instant communication, which we have now as we're talking to each other, that we are being made more aware of it. I do believe that governments have covered this up since the Second World War. And before that, maybe. And that is why it's only becoming more into the public conscious and being more made aware of it, because people have all the recording devices in the world. You know, everybody's got the mobile phone, everybody can take pictures, and now it's becoming more difficult for them to keep a lid on it. And because of that, I think we've got this slow pressure cooker, if you like, release, where the Tic Tac UFO, the Gimbal UFO, you know, the Nimitz encounters, these are all things that are just making people aware that, with the same with the term UAP, it's something that they're doing to make people aware that they're aware of it and that it's worthy of investigation. And I think it's just trying to make people aware of it without scaring everybody. But to go back to the frequencies, well, the other way that I explain it, if you imagine, we'll go back to the LP, the record, the vinyl record. If you imagine the outer edge is evil, if you like, and the very low frequencies, and the hole in the center is God, is purity, whatever you want to call it, whether you want to call it Buddha, God, Allah, whatever. It's pure thought and pure being and pure consciousness. And the grooves on the record are our lives, our lessons, and depending on how good we are by now, right now, not by what you may have done or what you've done in the past, it's by your thoughts now and your actions now, whether you improve and get towards that hole in the center of the record. And that, I believe, is the big, if you like, the big $64,000 question of our purpose here now is to lift ourselves, lift our vibration, lift our spirit, and live good ethics and good morals to progress towards the center. Mm-hmm. Now, it's no good if we all know that. And I believe that ET, again, I'll use that term, has been here forever. ET knows about us, but because they're able to completely manipulate the energy, they remain shrouded, if you like, from us and purposely stay away because they're not allowed to interfere. It's like I believe it's a universal law that every sentient being has to progress by their own effort. And it's right. The same with the crew.
I think your analogy is fantastic. And I'd like to amplify on that when we come back from our commercial break here. We're going to have to take a pause for a few minutes. Please don't go away. You're listening to Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm your host, Peter Canova. Please visit my website, petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com, where you can get a wealth of information on a lot of the topics and ideas that we discuss in this show. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at petercanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
We're back with our host, Paul Ascoff from the UK. And before the break, Paul gave a very beautiful analogy about how these frequencies operate using the idea of an old vinyl record and the grooves, the concentric grooves in the record. And and you said something about the outer edges being evil. It's really great when you meet somebody else who will give an analogy that is similar to the analogies that you've been giving, in a slightly different context. So in the Gnostic belief system, consciousness projected itself out from the pure center, as you describe it, which would be the hole in the record. Consciousness projected itself out. And but with each, projection outward, the clarity or the level of consciousness, the frequency became less and less. It became diluted. So think of making a CD, for instance. Okay, the original copy of the CD has the greatest sound fidelity to it. You make a copy of that, it's clear, but a little less so. And then a copy of that copy, a little less so. And as you go on out, it dilutes to the point where the idea of being part, or the clarity of being part of that unifying consciousness, it becomes so obscured that these other points of consciousness sort of become their own operators or actors, but they're acting on a stage or in a theater that is minus all the props that lead us to more pure experiences. So that we call evil. Evil is the diminished absence of light, and as you get further out from the source, these things happen, and that's why people say, well, how can a good God create such an evil world? Well, God didn't create this world. If you think of the analogy as a pure mountain stream, and as the stream spills down the side of the mountain, it starts to pick up pollutants along the way until finally, when it gets down to the bottom of the mountain, it gets kind of muddy. But that doesn't affect the purity of the stream up above from which it originated. It's these sort of intermediary forces, these intermediary frequencies that start to lose the clarity. And therefore, you can think of the frequencies that Paul and I have been talking about as containing different levels of light and shadow. Some of these levels and some of these points of consciousness can certainly be benevolent, others not so much. And then you get into areas where frequencies, where it's probably a mixed bag. I mean, look at us even here on Earth. We have a lot of great and beautiful things and beautiful people. And then we have, terrible evil and injustices that happen here. We live in one of these mixed worlds of light and shadow. I think, Paul, if I understood you correctly, you're saying something similar to that, just using a different analogy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Hey, the way that I put it over in the book was just use the stack of records to, it's a basic understanding. What I tried to do, and I'm sure that many other authors have gone down that path, and is try to write something that people can just pick up and easily understand. Because I think if you start getting too deep and too scientific with your explanations and thing, people will go like, oh, I need to think about this a minute. And, you know, and people need to read something that they can understand and they can grasp and make it easy for them. So what I've tried to do with the book is make it something that people can grasp and make it easy. And the analogy that I came up there was a simple way of putting the point across that people could pick up on.
Right. Now, Paul, in your view, what did these visitors want? And this could be a mixed bag of things. I mean, because apparently they're not all the same, but basically, why are they hovering over us? Why are they appearing here? And then we have the whole things about abduction. Some seem to be benevolent. Others seem to be like we're guinea pigs. Who are these visitors? What do they want?
Yeah. Well, I think they're like the races on Earth now. You get people at different levels of development through all people. Same with religions. You get religions that you'll always get good and bad in everything. And I believe it's the same with, I'll use the phrase ET because it's a cover all and people understand it. ET are the same. And I think that what they are doing is just, they interact with us only when they need to. But if I just may sidetrack slightly, our understanding of them is very limited, because if you think you're able to understand and manipulate the magnetic frequency, everything that we have, you and I, everybody at home now, sat in front of the computer, the chair they sat on, the computer screen they're in front of, the actual room that they're in, all have a magnetic field that all interact with everything around it. If we met in real life, we would know immediately if you're going to get on with somebody. And that's because your magnetic field can feel theirs and it interacts with it. And that's when you know if you're on the same wavelength as somebody. We have all these phrases that highlight this sort of thing. And it's the same, you know when you're not going to get on with somebody. And these frequencies affect everything. Therefore, our thought processes and the way that we think and all those are energy. And even Einstein said, everything is energy. So your thought processes, my thought processes, everything around us is energy. That if you can understand it, you can read it, you can manipulate it. And therefore, one of the things that I went on to as an investigator for Bufora, which is like your equivalent would be MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And I was very fortunate to have lunch with a guy called Bud Hopkins, who was a regressive hypnotherapist. Again, he said, Paul, I got into the UFO field quite by accident. He was there. He says, I was trying to be a good guy, trying to help people and do more counselling, help people that had got problems in life and do hypnotherapy like that. He said, but when you get into it, he said, people from all walks of life, whether they were very wealthy or very poor and had nothing, and all geographical locations all around the world. And he said, when they're all telling you exactly the same story, and there's no way that they could have met or even known each other, but they tell me exactly the same thing under hypnosis. He says, I became a convert, if you like. He says, there's obviously more to it. They're obviously telling the truth. He says, so why isn't this being investigated? Why aren't we being told, you know? And again, there was Bud Hopkins, Dolores Cannon. Well, fortunately, neither of them are with us, but we have more modern, Kath Marden, who's done regressive hypnotherapy with Calvin Parker recently. And Calvin, he was went through the abduction that was famous at Pascagoula. Now, that was what he could normally remember. But Calvin, when he went under the hypnotic regression, found out that he'd actually been abducted on 4 occasions, but that was the only one that he could normally remember. Now, everything we have is an electrical energy. So if you can understand it and manipulate it, therefore ET can manipulate it, and that's why people can't remember, people only remember certain things. You do get instances of people saying, well, there was a weird vehicle, or I thought I saw an owl in the trees is another favourite, but then they can't remember anything. Mm. And one of the big investigations that I did in the late 90s for Bufora, it was an abduction of 4 adults, and the guy actually said it was a strange atmosphere. And he says, I know I can't remember it correctly. He says, I've no recollection of it, the dusk. He says it was daylight, then it was suddenly dark. And he said, I can remember my brain thinking, why is it suddenly dark? And he gave a good description where he said, my memory of it is like an old videotape, an old VHS tape that had been cut up, most of it thrown away, but the bits that were put back together, I'm not remembering it in the right order. And that is the level of understanding and control that they have over the whole of the electromagnetic spectrum now, that we don't.
Paul, since there seem to be different visitors, let's say they don't seem to be a monolithic group. Is there any indication, or do you have any evidence, or have you run across anything that would lead you to indicate that they are in conflict or have had conflict with one another, us apart from the equation?
Yeah. Personally, no. I mean, yes, we all hear, as investigators, you hear stories of one group being against another group. From my personal experiences, I've only ever found things to be benevolent. Now, as far as I'm aware, I've never been abducted, but I know other good friends that have had a different experience, and theirs, I'm not saying wasn't so benevolent. And one of the things, another analogy, if I may, was if you imagine being in a normal nature reserve, wherever we are in the world, a nature reserve, and you might catch birds in a net, tag them, weigh them, make sure there's the amount that they should have, they weigh what they should have, and then you let them go. Maybe in a bizarre way, that's what ET are doing to us.
Well, do you think, for example, that let's say the people that have experiences that they feel are benevolent versus those they feel are malevolent or you know, it left them frightened, you know, which I've read quite a few of those.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that different people have different experiences, does that have something to do with our own frequencies? In other words, are some people putting out frequencies that, you know, would lead the less benevolent ones to them, and others putting out frequencies that would lead the more benevolent ones to them? Does that make any sense to you?
It does, and I hadn't actually thought of that, so that's a good question, Peter. But I think at the end of the day, because they're able to understand and control it, it's your own personal development and your level of vibration that you're at will obviously have some interpretation differences, and some people will find it and be able to accept it and not be as frightened, where people that are, dare I say, not as well developed and don't want to be frightened and don't want to know, will have a more malevolent interpretation of it.
Yeah, I mean, I finished a segment for a documentary that's going to appear in February by the people that did What the Bleep Do We Know, and it was on healing. And, you know, they were asking me, why do some people experience, you know, healings almost like instantaneously and others don't? And my answer was similar to what we've talked about here, which is I said, well, you know, you got to remember that we all have an electromagnetic frequency that we put out. And these frequencies can either merge or deflect or literally go right through you, depending upon whether the frequencies sync or resonate. So that the people whose frequencies are syncing with the energy being put out by the healer would be the ones who, you know, would experience the more spontaneous or more rapid healings. The other ones, not so much until their frequency was, you know, was brought into resonance. So I think it's similar to something that, you know, to what we just discussed. Yeah. We're going to have to take another break for a few minutes here. You're listening to Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio. I'm your host, Peter Canova. And we're going to take a short break here and then be back with our guest, Paul Askoff. So please don't go away. We'll be right back.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at PeterCanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Cat O'Keefe Canavas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
I'm Peter Canova. We're back with Quantum Spirituality, and our guest today, Paul Askoff, talking about UFOs or UAPs as unidentified aerial phenomena. I guess we're moving more towards that term because the people who are now wanting to talk about this want to get rid of some of the old stigmas about wearing tin caps and, you know, having little guys with big eyes creeping in your room, but acknowledging that there definitely is something else out there. Paul, I wanted to ask you, have you detected or yourself or read anywhere, is there any common denominator of to those people who have UFO close encounters? Is there any common attribute or circumstances that seem to distinguish them from people who just spot things in the sky as opposed to having close encounters?
That's a very good question. And the answer from my point of view, Peter, is I have no idea. It would appear to be completely random. Throughout history and with different investigators and what people have done, if you look at the backgrounds of the abductees, they seem to be from all walks of life. And you just seem to get the broad spectrum of humanity across the field. Just, if I may just regress slightly to what we did last time, you were on about healing. One of the positive things that came out of the investigation I did from four adults that were abducted, one of the gentlemen had really, really serious psoriasis, that he would go to the local city like an hour away under a consultant because at least once a month because his skin was so bad. And after the abduction, I mean, they'd been going backwards and forwards for years, a big problem with him. And then after the abduction, it spontaneously cleared up and he never had a problem again, as far as I know.
But that was a benevolent experience, I would take it, he had.
Yeah. Now, that it turned out to be a benevolent side effect or in the long term. But at the time, they were terrified. And they had a visitation. They'd been discussing it. The couples, they were cousins. And the both couples had met up to discuss what they should do before they contacted Bufora. And when they were walking back to the home, they walked past a little children's play area with swings and little roundabouts and climbing things, pretty near, maybe only a few hundred yards from their home. And as they're walking past the edge of this grassy field and the children's play area, there were these big black figures. And the wife said she was absolutely terrified. She says it was like being in a nightmare. And we just knew this feeling that they got from them. And she said, I couldn't get home fast enough. She said, I never went over there again at night, especially on my own. And she said they never did anything, but it was the feeling she got.
Okay, now, so they had a benevolent result from a scary experience. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about the cover up, the governmental cover ups. Okay. So, you know, the reason when I was growing up, we were always given is that, oh well, you know, there'd be a mass panic, blah blah blah. And then, you know, more recently, it's like, well, you know, we didn't want to have the public think we've had this history of covering up and lying and everything else. And I, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, but do those really hold water? First of all, I think maybe in the 1950s, you know, during the Cold War, it would have caused a panic because you're thinking, wow, the Russians have something we don't. Yeah. Okay. And I guess there's still, you know, a couple theories out there that either these are from some unknown origin or from an earthly origin where somebody's leapfrogged our technology. But regardless, I'm thinking, you know, people have matured, you know, and also a lot of the, you know, players that were involved in the cover-up, at least here in the United States, are no longer with us. They've passed on. So I'm thinking to myself, what's the impetus for the government? What's the interest in the government to still keep covering up the fact that, you know, we have things out there that nobody can explain? I think the world audience is mature enough to accept that. And if it's from another power on Earth here, well, you know, I guess that's certainly something to be concerned about. But, you know, they've been around for a while and they haven't attacked us yet. So, why are governments really not more forthcoming about what's going on? You know, we have Christopher Mellon who is helping this conversation along by saying, hey, listen, there's definitely stuff out there. Let's talk about it. Let's start investigating it. Why can't we take a more, mature, considered look at what these are on the part of government? And they feel like they still have to continually sweep this stuff under the rug. I don't get the rationale.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. And I think it started with the Cold War, because at the end of the day, let's face it, the Second World War had just finished. Everybody was very touchy about who'd got what, how good the Russians were, how good the Americans were, how good the Chinese even. But at the end of the day, nobody really knew. We personally didn't have the technology. And that's when they started with the U-2 and the normal Skunkworks and the Black Projects to try and get more information. And I think because they've covered things up, and think on, they've had 70 years to practice this, so they're very good at what they do. They're very good at covering up, they're very good at silencing people. But because of this modern technology that we all have, you could go out now, see something, record it, put it on the internet, and immediately everybody in the world can see it. That's what happened, as an example, in 2011 when the UFO came down over the Dome of the Rock at Jerusalem. And we had one or two investigators that went out to that, and there was six different groups of people with different videos, different viewpoints. It was even caught on the Jerusalem's own weather station security camera. So what you've got to look at the background as well. So you've got all these people, you've got the corroborative evidence, you've got it on all different films, but still Fox News decided to put out the hoax video. Somebody made a hoax video to sort of dampen it down and to poo-poo the idea, and it just happened to be the hoax video, not one of the real ones, that Fox News Network put on the air. And I think because of this cover-up that we've had, we'll just use Rendlesham Forest and Roswell and these others, because they've had it covered up and so tight a rein on it for so long, they realise now over time, and with modern technology, they've got to start letting it go and let the lid go off the pressure cooker somewhat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's what's happening.
Paul, you've also had experiences in the realm of the paranormal. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that, and then, you know, how you feel that those tie in, you know, with the whole phenomenon of the UFOs.
What happened when we moved to this new village when I was 11 years old? I've been brought up quite high Church of England. You had to go to Bible classes and all that. That's how I was brought up. And then when we moved to the new home, we moved literally within 50 yards of a spiritualist church. And some of my father's work colleagues went to the spiritualist church. So as children, you do what your parents tell you. So we then went to the spiritualist church. Now, I didn't go out of any sense of religion, any sense of desire to be a spiritualist or join anything or do anything like that. You just went when your parents said. But as I grew up as a teenager, following my first UFO sightings, I was an avid reader, trying to read everything I could on UFOs. But back then, there were no internet. There was none of the things you could get like you can now. So you had to get out off your butt and get out on a bus or a train and go to the bigger cities to even find a bookstore or anything that would stock a book on UFOs and to be able to order them, to read them. So I was reading and reading. So one day I'm walking past the church to go see some friends as a teenager. And as I'm walking, there's this old guy stood outside in a brown three-piece suit, brown pinstripe three. And I stood there and he just goes, "Paul." And I didn't know him. He said, "Paul." So, "Oh, okay. And you respect your elders." So I walked over towards him. He said, "Have you just got a minute? I have something to tell you." And he went in his pocket and he got out this little bit of paper, a little pen, and he just wrote like this. And then he held it up. And there was just the three letters, UFO. And he said, "I've just been told by spirit to show you that and tell you you're thinking along the right lines." And it was like, and I hadn't said anything, and I didn't know this guy. Mm. Now, my parents, as a bit of background, my parents didn't even know that I read and read and read and was trying to study UFOs and trying to find out more things and reading all these other authors. So for a complete stranger to do that was like, whoa.
Yeah, well, you know, I can relate to that. I think in some of my earlier shows, I talked about some of my experiences in Africa and these people that were village bush doctors who didn't know me would approach me on the streets of Lagos, Nigeria, and start telling me things about what I was going to do in my line of, you know, what I was thinking, you know, right on. So I've had very similar experiences. I can completely relate to what you just said. And, you know, I tell you that I lived overseas for quite a while, and I love the UK because spiritualism in the UK is just so much more deeply rooted than it is here. At least I think it is. And I used to go to the British Spiritualist Association to get some guidance because for a while there, I thought I was going crazy. I would be picking up so many impressions. I'd know conversations 10 minutes before they would happen. I'd see somebody in the street and I'd know their like life story. And I mean, it was really wild. I was like a sponge that couldn't stop. So I went to the British Spiritualist Association to kind of get some help to control this stuff. And I had some very, very interesting experiences there. I heard my great grandmother talk to me in saying things that only my great grandmother would know. So I very much can get that vision of your spiritualist church in the little English village there. And I that's very close to my heart. We only have a couple of minutes left here. I think we have two or three minutes left. Can you just tie this together? What is the connection you see between, let's say, paranormal, the spiritual, and the UFOs? Kind of bring those avenues together for us.
Yeah, everything is on its own frequency. And I believe that a lot of spirit, we'll say cryptids even, as well as UFOs, they're able to control the frequency. But spirit, ghosts, if people want to call it that, are on a level maybe on the record underneath us. Your spirit guides may be on the record above us because they're just on that higher frequency. And it's the same with cryptids, why we've never found a real-life Bigfoot. But people have all these experiences. And one of the other things that I believe is that when people, there are areas, geographical locations around the world, you could use Skinwalker Ranch as an example, where the records almost touch and the veil is very thin, if you like. So we get these hundreds of places around the earth where people experience these odd things. And it's the same when people see spirit, when people see UFO, and you get a lot of it when people see Bigfoot and Sasquatch, they're terrified. And I believe that's at a personal, your soul that knows you're in a place where you shouldn't be. You're crossing onto a different frequency, onto a different record, and your soul knows we shouldn't be here. And that's why people have this almost a visceral terror, if you like, from crossing over onto a different frequency where they shouldn't be. Does that make sense?
It does. Although I do think we can cross over to those frequencies in our meditations guide ourselves in positive ways and bring back information that's useful in our world here. You know, I hate to say it, this is a fascinating discussion. I think we've run out of time. Paul, I want to thank you for appearing with us today. Very interesting. I want to remind our viewers that this is Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio. You can go to my website, petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com, where you can listen to the show live and you can also access the archives of previous shows. So we're going to sign off today. Again, thank you, Paul, and thank you all out there for listening to Quantum Spirituality. Please join us again next time.
This ends today's segment of Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and present merge to show us our future. Join us the first Tuesday of each month for cutting-edge information and informative new episodes. This show will be archived on the Quantum Spirituality Dream Vision 7 Radio Network website page, also accessible at petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.